to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 112 with Dr. Mike St. Pierre. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversations with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Dr. St. Pierre, we explore a number of interesting topics like how technology impacts students' ability to collaborate, invest in people early, float the balloon, check yourself, ninja tactics, and how Mike uses silence in the morning. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the content, I'd like to take some time to thank our show's sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose mission is to support people in education and nonprofit organizations to improve processes and enhance the performance of their organizations. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Hey there, Better Leaders. I am so excited to connect with today's guest. Dr. Mike St. Pierre is the Executive Director of the Catholic Campus Ministry Association, a national association of professional campus ministers serving on over 350 campuses. Prior to his current role, Mike was a school president for 7 years in New Jersey. Mike's doctoral dissertation explored the impact of technology on secondary school students and their ability to collaborate. He and his wife, Carrie, have 4 children. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be on.
Man, I think, you know, I always ask about what inspired you to pursue a career in education, but I got so caught up by this technology dissertation. I want to jump in there. Tell me,
sure.
What did you find out?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm self-admittedly kind of a technology geek. So the invitation to write a couple hundred pages about technology was just, you know, too good of an opportunity.
Sign
I couldn't
me up.
Mess it up. Yeah, right. preacher to the choir. You know, what I learned, I think the biggest takeaway is that in my mind, the ninja skill that school leaders and school administrators have the opportunity to teach young people is the ability to focus. And technology, as wonderful a gift as it is, does make it harder and harder for young people to focus and to think clearly about one thing at a time. So I would say that, you know, they have this innate ability to collaborate and work together and accomplish meaningful goals in combinations of students and dyads and triads, whatever. But the biggest takeaway, honestly, and it was for myself as much as for the students that I studied, was, wow, what an incredibly valuable skill it is, and I think increasingly rare, that skill of focusing and kind of calming the mind down to be able to really zone in on one thing at a time.
Mike, have you ever read Deep Work by Cal Newport by any chance?
Oh, one of my favorite books.
Yeah. So, okay. And I'm just curious then, like in terms of focus and then getting to this deep type of work, what kind of tips could you offer the listeners?
Well, you know, as I was writing the dissertation, I realized that I had already earned a PhD in procrastination. I just didn't know it. And, you know, I sort of uncovered that after hour sitting at a desk and, you know, kind of saying to myself, okay, Mike, get off Facebook, get back to work, you know, turn off Twitter, get back to work. But I think that Cal Newport's onto something with Deep Work. it's really this idea that, you know, kind of two things. One, what got you there is not what's going to get you to the next level. So like for school leaders, typically, you know, they rise in the ranks, and maybe it's personality or an ability to teach, or they're really organized or whatever. And then they get promoted and they climb up the ladder, and then they become VP or AP or principal or super, whatever it might be. And then they realize, oh my gosh, I'm in this role and it requires a new set of skills and the ability to focus and concentrate on deeper things than before. So one, I would just say that's the realization that's really so valuable, is being able to focus and do meaningful tasks for prolonged periods of time is really the new skill that that school leaders, I really believe, have to marshal. I think on a ground level perspective, you know, how do you do that? Well, hopefully we'll talk about, you know, the idea of theming days, but becoming actually inaccessible for periods of time during the day is really so important. So whether that's early in the morning before somebody gets to school, or it's the, you know, post 3 p.m. set of hours where maybe things are a little bit more quiet, or it's times during the day when a leader can close the door and really focus on things. So, you know, I think the obvious piece of being in a school is that it's a wonderful hive of activity, and there's a lot of interruptions, and that's good. And we should be interruptible, certainly at any time. But with that said, when you go into the day with a plan and a sense of, okay, I have to make sure I get in a certain number of hours of kind of focused, quiet work, that's a different mindset, and that's a nice complement to being interruptible during the day.
And you mentioned theming days, so I think you've whet the listener's appetite with that. So how do you categorize your days and think about weeks and chunks of time?
Yeah, so I started getting into this when I was a school leader and a school administrator, and I realized that if I didn't have some kind of an order to my week, then the week would just be consumed with meetings and interruptions and things like that. And some meetings are valuable, but in my experience, many are not. And so, you know, I built every week imperfectly, you know, if I'm honest, but every week was built so that Monday I had kind of a theme that I was working on, and Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday. And that was great because I was, you know, I was accountable to a board, and I was able to tell them, no, we are working on our strategic plan, and I know because I'm spending every Thursday morning for 2 hours working on it and touching it and, you know, nudging the organization forward. So it's great for accountability and assessment, but it's also great for the individual because he or she has peace of mind that, yeah, I'm doing the urgent, but I'm also making sure that I'm attending to the bigger kind of 30,000 foot priorities that ultimately I'm going to be graded on. So, you know, today as a leader of a national organization, it's imperative that I theme my days because I have total discretion of my time and I don't have as many meetings. So I have no excuse not to theme my days and my weeks now. But I would welcome school leaders to try it out. Just try it out for a week or two and give yourself permission to just name certain things you'd like to work on those different days and see how it works. I suspect that you know, there's probably going to be greater peace of mind and probably lead to greater productivity. I know it has for me.
I love it. That's a great tactic that I want all the listeners to heed Mike's advice and really just try it out for a few weeks and see if it sticks. Mike, do you mind sharing maybe what, if you can remember what those theme days look like back when you were principal and now in your new role? Just curious because, you know, the listener definitely understands what you're saying, but Cal also talks about a what, how gap. And so they know what to do, but how they do it. So what worked for you?
Yeah. So I'll tell you what it looks like now. And so for me, Mondays are all about content creation. So that's, I populate an entire week of social media in about an hour. And you actually can do that, which is amazing. You know, a lot of people say, I don't have time for Twitter and Facebook and all that. I'm able to schedule 40 or 50 posts within 1 hour.
Wow.
So, and then I do blog posts and email updates and all that kind of good stuff. So that's what Mondays are. Fridays are kind of a deep work, out of the office, time to think, time to work on long-term projects that honestly I really don't want to work on, but I just force myself for a couple hours every Friday morning. So that's a great kind of way to unplug and do something off-site on Fridays. And then that leaves Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays to populate the next week in terms of appointments, constituency relations, you know, being on the phone, being on conference calls, doing podcasts like this, just being in touch with my quote unquote, my people, you know. So when I was in a school, it was a little bit different just because I had so many people to manage. And so Mondays were, Mondays were people. And so I met with the people that reported directly to me. And so I had four or five one-on-ones on Monday to kind of start their week and point them in a direction. Tuesday was more about staff meetings. So I did a couple of staff meetings, and that let me kind of work on bigger groups and pointing them in a certain direction and just talking in dialogue and getting their feedback. And then that let me take Wednesday and Thursday to be out and about in terms of meetings. And so I would use the word populace there. And then Friday was a day for planning, getting the next week ready, and again, just kind of touching those bigger ticket items. I would come in about 2 hours later on a Thursday morning, and that let me work in a coffee shop on the school strategic plan for 2 hours every Thursday morning. And it was really transformative, you know, because for me, the strategic plan was no longer boring. It was something that I had an appointment with every week. And, you know, being in a coffee shop with a good cup of coffee is not a bad way to start the day either.
Oh, no, that sounds so good. And you were telling that story, I started to daydream because I'm thinking, man, Mike's themed days sound so good. I wish I was doing that right now. Like, I'm going to steal it and take it.
Steal it. Absolutely. I've had superintendents who have said that to me, and I was talking to somebody recently, and he said, I don't know who I heard this from. It was somebody at a talk once about theming your days, and it was a couple years ago, and I said, that was me, you know. So, yeah, steal it and modify it, and it's not original to me, but it's worked really well.
It's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I know that the listeners are definitely going to try it out. Like I said, you know, 3 weeks, see if it sticks, but that's just a lot of value you offered there, so we appreciate it. Mike, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, if I'm totally honest, Daniel, I think it was, you know, a little bit of happenstance, a little bit of God's sense of humor. I was actually working in a church, and I wanted to just have more points of contact with young people. And so I went to the nearest high school, and I just said, you know, if you have any coaching opportunities, I'd be open to that. And, you know, I have some discretionary time. And they said, this is totally God's honest truth. They said, well, we don't have any coaching opportunities, but we do have four classes that we need somebody to teach. What do you think?
Let's do this.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, that would never fly today, but 20 years ago. So I began working those two jobs simultaneously, which probably wasn't a good idea in hindsight. But my wife, you know, behind every good man is a better woman, and that's definitely the case in my life. And my wife said that I seemed more peaceful, and she thought it was because of the bells and the schedule of the school building, that it gave me permission to do these blocks of work in the course of a day with students. And so that was an early indicator that I guess it just resonated with me, and you know, it's stuck ever since. And 20 years later, education is still very much, you know, part of who I am and what I do. And as a dad too.
Awesome. Yeah. The bells hypnotize you into efficiency and effectiveness.
Yeah. There's something about it, you know?
Awesome. How would you describe your leadership style, and how'd you develop it?
Oh, good question. Well, I think for me, when I became a school administrator, so I was a vice principal for 2 years and then went right into president for 7 years. Unfortunately, when you get in those positions, you realize, oh my gosh, I'm merely playing out all of the leaders that have instructed me along the way, and you start doing things the way they did them. And then it takes a couple of years where you have to kind of figure out, well, what's my style? You know, am I really like that person that I thought I emulated, or do I have kind of my own unique approach? So, you know, I mean, I don't think I can be totally objective in assessing my own self, you know,
sure, but I
can say that, you know, people told me that I was collaborative, that I was fair, firm, and friendly. Those are three words that somebody taught me once, which I think never go out of style. You know, if your people know you care, if they know where you stand, if you're firm, and if you're pleasant, you know, you're approachable and interruptible, in other words, friendly, I think that typically that makes for a good leader. And I hope that, you know, I continue to practice those. And I think it's like a muscle. You have to just continue to flex it and keep it out of shape. I texted tonight my former head of maintenance because today's his birthday. And, you know, I can't really take any credit for that because it just showed up on Google Calendar. I never would have remembered otherwise.
I was going to ask you how you remembered it.
But, you know, I did it. And I guess, you know, there's some brownie points in that. But because I care, because he's just, you know, an incredibly decent human being and doesn't cost anything to send somebody, you know, birthday wishes. So those things matter. You know, those things matter. Going to the viewings and funerals of people's elderly parents when they pass away, or, you know, sending a note to teachers in the summer wishing them, you know, a restful break. We used to do something where we'd send every teacher a little Dunkin' Donuts gift card in the summer, you know, just to say, hey, thinking of you, hope everything's well, hope you're resting up, and go get a cup of coffee on me. You know, those things matter a lot. And typically bookkeepers don't like those kinds of things because they see them as frivolous. But I can tell you that a teacher finds that just very heartfelt in the middle of summer, because, you know, a school leader doesn't have to do that. But to take a couple hours and write personal notes, it shows that they care. So, you know, I would much rather be seen as a leader who cares than as, you know, a reformer, visionary, disruptor. We need those too. But sometimes those people can be real jerks. And I would much rather be seen as, you know, a collaborative leader who cares.
But here's the thing too, you know, my mentor, he talks about his father, and his father had many, many faults. He, you know, had some trouble in life, but he treated people very well. And when it was his time and God called him home, listen, the line to get into the funeral, right, was around the block. and you know that he touched people's lives, and yeah, that's what matters. And yeah, sure, it'd be great to be disruptor, innovator, and change, you know, shift the paradigm of how we see education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you do it in a way that doesn't value, honor, and treat people well, like,
yeah,
who cares? Who really cares what you did?
Pretty much. I mean, if your SAT scores are great, but the morale is terrible, that's a real problem.
Right.
So, you know, it's not to say that it's not either or, you know, it's not like, well, I can have bad SAT scores or I can have great morale. No, you can have both, but you have to, I like how you use that word. You have to honor your people.
Yeah.
And if you do that, they will walk a mile for you, you know, but it's not about SAT scores.
And let me rag on you too for a second and really challenge the listeners. It's funny that you mentioned how you remembered your former head custodian's birthday, because like I was really interested in that, because I do things to try to remember people's stuff that way. And you know, if you mentioned in passing, hey, I'm going, you know, on an interview tomorrow, and I'll say what time at 11 a.m., I'll write it down. Mm-hmm. And then what I do, I mean, there's smartphones for a reason. I'll use Siri, right? Leave me a reminder for that day at that time.
That's right.
And I'll leave two reminders, one to encourage Mike before the interview and one to follow up, like to see how it went. And that's because that person's going to feel great when you follow up, and it makes them, it shows, it demonstrates that you care. But here's the other thing, and this is why I want to brag on you. We've all got these devices now. You reminded me. Yeah. So I have friends on Facebook, Google, all this stuff. So the birthday reminder comes up, and everyone will do the happy birthday, Mike, on Facebook. Like, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. that you might as well not do that. But what people don't do, here's some ways you can set yourself apart. Send the text, write a birthday card. What about this? Record a 10-second video and tell that person why you love them so much.
Nice.
And then text them today. Like, that's going to make their freaking day.
Yeah.
And that's how you demonstrate that you care. And I'm so proud that you took the time to, you know, text the custodian. That's just what a way to honor him.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's about, you know, being a decent human being, and every good school leader, if they're worth their salt, you know, they realize that their leadership is delicate, and there are a whole lot of people that make it hum or can really sink it. And I think it's best to learn that right up front rather than trying to take, you know, a lot of credit.
So I just bragged on you, but now I'm going to tear you down. And I love asking this question, which is, what's been your worst leadership mistake and what have you learned from it?
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, hey, I mean, again, I think any honest leader acknowledges there's a lot of mistakes that you make along the way. You know, I think for me, early on, I wish that I just had invested a lot more in people and relationships rather than trying to be so quick to be a bold leader and a decisive leader. I think I wish that boldness and decisiveness naturally flowed out of just a deep concern and care for teachers and students. And that's hard when you're a young leader because you just don't know what you don't know. And I was that guy, you know, and I think the older I got and the more time that I was a school leader, I realized that I stopped worrying about, is this a bold move? Is this a decisive move? And I just started thinking about, you know, is this the right thing for our community? And can we all get behind it? So, you know, I mean, every leader makes certain decisions that, you know, in hindsight, you can second guess yourself. But I think just the biggest thing for me was, you know, I wish that I would have just invested more in people early and just been a more patient leader and acknowledged that, you know, the boldness and the decisiveness, there's plenty of opportunities for those things along the way, but you don't have to start with that. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. It does. Yeah. I would say it does. And sometimes I think we get caught up, at least I could say this, you know, in trying to accomplish this initiative or move it forward or whatever. And you forget everything else that matters, you know. And again, bringing it back to the relationships, demonstrating that you care and the people. If you get caught up about the vision, which is, you know, it's probably inspiring and it's going to impact kids and the community and it's good, mm-hmm. but you got to ground yourself in the reality and be able to pause, take a pulse of where everybody's at, make sure that they're still with you, right? Because you're 20 yards ahead running right. after the vision, but nobody's following. What are you doing?
Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing, Daniel. There are ways to check yourself. You know, it's like when a person goes on a date or an appointment or something, they kind of check themselves in the mirror, you know?
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's ways for leaders to check themselves through their own people. And a little trick you can do is, I call it floating the balloon, you know. And so you stop by a teacher's classroom and, you have some small talk and you say, hey, can I run an idea by you? You know, if the administration did this or phrased this way, how do you think that would be received by teachers? You know, I mean, boy, if you get in the habit of doing that, oh, my goodness, again, it just builds such a deep rapport with teachers. But second, it honestly, you really start to value what teachers think and how they perceive things, because a lot of times it's really different from how the administrator sees it. So that's one thing that you can do. And it's just, you know, I call it floating the balloon, you know, hey, can I just want to run this by you? You know, if we did this, you know, how would that strike you? Or how do you think teachers would respond to that? And that's just a nice screen or filter that I think is a good thing to have in place before any big decisions. And you'll start to find that you'll actually start doing it with small things too, you know, and it might be, hey, we always have bagels for the faculty meeting. Should we change that up? You know, again, little thing.
They're going to tell you.
they're going to tell you. And those little things go a long way. They really do.
That's great. You're providing so much value and so many different tactics, the theme in the days, the float in the balloon. I'm really excited to go back and listen to this edited version of the show. So thank you again. Sticking with tactics, you know, listeners are really interested in starting their days off right and really, you know, setting the tone for the day. So I'm curious what the first hour of your day looks like. And maybe you can expound on this or not. Not everybody has a morning ritual, but
sure.
You?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I do. I call it a morning practice. And for me now, admittedly, I'm an introvert, I'm a New Englander, and I'm a morning person, you know, so having a morning ritual for me is, I mean, probably just by my DNA, a little bit easier than some other people. With that said, I still have to practice it. I still have to go to bed a reasonable time the night before. But I like to get up around 5:15. It's before everybody else in the house. And it's quiet. And I like that. And I've got about an hour where I can make a cup of coffee, do some stretches. If it's warm enough, I'll sit out on the porch. I mean, there's nothing like birds squawking to start the day. You know, just there's something healthy about that. I'll spend some time doing some Bible reading, some journaling. I really find that to be very useful. And I look at the news. You know, I'm a news junkie. I'm a sports crazy fan head, you know, so I can't get that out of my system. So to me, I just look at it. It's all part of my morning routine. I use an RSS reader called Reader on the Mac. And so, you know, I read about a dozen blogs a day and I find that helpful. I check my blog stats, my YouTube stats, all that kind of stuff, my email stats. I don't do email in that first hour, but I do like to kind of check everything. And I've got, you know, just sort of a list of things that I go through. And then if I'm brave enough, I'll just shut up and listen. And if I can do that for a minute or two, and I know that sounds like, wow, that's kind of pathetic, you know, but I don't think, you know, I think 99% of us don't do that. When I'm courageous enough to do that, boy, that's just really valuable to center me. To remind me of the people that I'll get to serve in the course of the day and to maybe think through some of the difficult things that might be scheduled during the day. And then I'm on my way, you know, and it's a crazy day and it's a fast-paced schedule and all that. But that's typically what my morning routine looks like.
Can you remember a particularly powerful prompting or idea or question that came to you during your silence and listening time, what that might have been, if you're comfortable sharing that with the listeners?
Yeah, you know, it's not so much a question or a prompting, but sometimes a person will come to mind that I'm getting a sense that, you know, maybe I should talk to that person. Maybe it's okay, you know. Or I'll get a sense like, okay, the timing isn't right to have this conversation with this person. So when it does feel right, I'm going to revisit that. That has really served me well. And, you know, if I don't know if that's, you know, God or if that's just gut or whatever it is, but I think when you build that kind of quiet morning muscle, typically things kind of bubble up to the surface. And for me, it's been typically people and conversations that I think I'm ready to have with them and maybe a way of phrasing it that, okay, it's okay to have this kind of difficult assessment conversation with a person. And I was, you know, procrastinating it for a week. Now's the time. It's okay. And let's kind of dip our foot in that what could be, you know, a little confrontational conversation. It's okay. So for me, it's typically, well, it's connected to people. And many times, you know, I would say someone will come to mind and I'll say, you know, I'm going to trust this moment. And I thought of that person for a reason. And so I'm going to call them today or I'm going to sit down and have that conversation. And, you know, most of the time that works out pretty well.
Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, who are strategic thought partners, leaders of public sector organizations. They also ideate, build, and maintain easy-to-understand data tools using the latest analytics technology. You can learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. Mike, you've transitioned to a new role this past year, the executive director of the Catholic Campus Ministry Association. Can you tell us a little bit of the story of how you got there and what you're excited about?
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I'm really excited about higher ed. And having spent my whole career in secondary ed, it's fascinating and really very life-giving, you know, to be working with those who are serving on college campuses. What led to this was just kind of listening to my gut. You know, I think every leader, if they are reflective and honest with themselves, they realize that you just hit plateaus, you know, or you find yourself kind of wrapping up a season of leadership or in a particular school or context or district. And somebody told me once, Daniel, and I think it's true, it's better to go out on your own terms than have somebody take you out on their terms, you know?
That so, is true.
Yeah, I mean, it's painfully true, right? So I just, you know, I just had a sense that it was time and just felt like, you know, I wanted to explore some other opportunities related to education, but maybe a different context. I should say I have four kids, so, you know, from 6 to 16. So that's my main mission in life, is just to be a good dad and a good husband to my wife. So I didn't want to miss that. And when you're a school leader, you know, you're pulling 60, 70, 80 nights a year out for school functions. And for me, at least, while I love that and I cherish those relationships with families and colleagues and teachers, I could just tell it was starting to kind of burn on the edges, you know, and before it, I don't know, burned me out or made me negative or resentful, I just felt like I wanted to explore some other opportunities. So, you know, it's what I'm doing now is completely different from leading a high school. But I think that when we talked in the beginning about, you know, the qualities of a good leader, they're very similar. You know, they really are. Tell the truth, be honest, be responsible, care, do the little things, be organized, keep your eye on the mission. That's pretty much what I do. And it's just in a different context today.
You know, I'm really interested in relationships. Probably, you know, this is coming out September, so tied the knot in July. and really, really looking forward to that.
It's awesome. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So I like hearing about what makes it work. You talked about being a good dad, you know, good husband. And the other day, you know, in the mastermind, we just started talking about relationships because the principal is he's moving to accept a position and his wife is keeping the role that she has and they're going to be apart for some time. Mm-hmm. And that brought some anxiety to him and he wants to make sure he stays connected. And I totally get it. And I was able to share this exercise, which I shared with my email list. And I'm going to write a blog post about it, too. But I'm just curious, do you have any great like relationship exercises or communication exercises with spouses or kids that have worked really well for you?
Yeah, sure. So my kids, when they hear this, because I'll make them listen to this. I mean, they should be listening to your podcast anyways.
Oh,
you know?
Boy.
So shame on them if they're not. Okay. They would roll their eyes because I'll tell you that one of the most valuable things we do as a family is we do a Sunday night staff meeting. And when I first started it, I mean, I said, gee, we do staff meetings at school all the time, right? You know, just get everybody in the same room, get everybody on the same page,
yeah,
answer questions. Yeah, so I figured let's do it at home. I mean,
yes.
I'm kind of a nerd, so let's try it. And of course, you know, initially I insisted that everybody download a particular productivity app and I was sharing the week's schedule. I mean, yeah. I was posting articles, you know, I mean, it was like – out of control.
Yeah,
and they totally revolted. Like they deleted the app, you know.
No.
I mean, it was, yeah, here I am like big school leader and my own family is like literally doing like a faculty meeting revolt, you know. So we took a different approach and now there's no app. It's just a list. I mean, I have an app and a list that I keep
yeah, of course.
Because I forget otherwise. But it's less than 5 minutes and it's Sunday night after dinner and it's okay, family staff meeting, here's what we got. And we go over the schedule of the week ahead and typically a couple of kind of you know, key things like, hey, Grace has this, her place Thursday night. It's a really big deal. We need everybody to really be supportive of her because it's a high stress time, you know, or Thomas has final exams this week. Let's make sure we're, you know, I don't know, honoring his time and not bothering him when he's studying, something like that. So that's something that, again, my kids would roll their eyes, but I think to a person, they would tell you that's very valuable time for our family. You know, for my wife and I mean, education is extremely demanding, as you know. And if you're not both totally into it and committed, it could hurt your relationship, you know, because you can, I mean, my wife, I know, you know, there were years where she felt like a single mom because I was just out so much, and that's not so good, you know. I think when I go over the schedule with her, she just is able to give her input a lot of times, make good suggestions, and she just feels more part of it, you know, as opposed to, well, here's where I have to go and see you later. Good luck. You know, hope the kids are good. That's not helpful, at least not to our marriage. I think the other thing that was great for me, Daniel, was just including my wife and kids in school things. You know, not everything, but kids are a great prop, and my kids are darn cute. And so, you know, I love bringing my kids to football games and fundraisers and all kinds of stuff. I mean, one, it gave me a wingman, you know, because as an introvert, that can be helpful, have a person with you. But second, it just showed them, this is what dad does. Okay, that's really awesome. You know, and when I left the high school, you know, they had just had this beautiful going away party. It was just so touching. And I said to my kids, and I think I was like almost in tears, I said, I hope you get to do something in life as wonderful as I get to do. And yes, that's fine. Sorry, Daniel. I just got interrupted by a 6-year-old.
No problem. So
it's all good. But I said to them, I hope you get to do something as special as what dad has got to do. Because, you know, being a school leader, it's just such a privilege and such a stewardship, such a gift that you have in your hands. And, you know, it's without a family to just be supportive and be with you in that, I think it could be really difficult. So, but I'm psyched for you. You're going to be heading into this next chapter of your own leadership and work, and you're going to have your best friend right there at your side. How great is that?
Oh, it's so good. She's amazing. And, I try to tell her, listen, you know, if I could create you out of dirt and earth, you know, I would create you exactly how God has created you. Like, I would not change a thing. And like you said, best friend, you know, just what an amazing gift in my life. You know, she's tremendous.
Awesome.
So, and I love the staff meeting. So that's great for the listeners. And I love that you include everybody, you know, or try to, right? Not to every event. So those are really insightful things, you know, for us to do as leaders. You know, I wonder what would have happened with the staff meetings if you would have brought bagels or floated the balloon, maybe the coup.
I should have done that, you know. I mean, I should have been practicing what I was preaching, you know.
It's all good, though. You know, you'll get – it sounds like they still love you, so it's okay.
That's right. That's right.
So knowing what you know now, Mike, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Be more patient. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't take things personally. You know, I mean, most teachers think of administrators and certainly central office as kind of bureaucrats and useless. And that's not even personal. It's just that they've seen so many bad ones over the years, you know, that they just presume, oh, the last one was lousy. You're probably gonna be lousy too. You know, it's actually not personal. It's just that when you become the boss, it's as if you have this big sign on your forehead that says boss, you know, and you have to realize that, not at all in an ego way, but more just, okay, I am responsible for the lives and salaries and families of all these people in this community. I mean, I say don't be so hard on yourself. Don't take things personally, because it probably is not personal. And be more patient, you know, with yourself and with your staff. I mean, most of them are probably doing the best they can. And if they knew a different or a better way, they'd probably be doing it. So why not teach them what might be, you know, an alternate teaching technique or, you know, pedagogy or something like that? Show them a way, give them a chance to try something new. And they'll, you'll find out if they can try it, they will. And if they want to improve and get better in their craft, they will. And if they don't, or if they can't, then that's when you know that you make some changes and moves. But most of the time, they're probably doing the best they can.
It's a great, you know, very optimistic. And I think, we talked about honoring point of view again, you know, thinking that people are doing the best they can with what they have and really giving them, you didn't say this, but giving them a runway, right? To try, right. To experiment, to fail,
right.
and to be open to coaching. And it tells you a lot. Like if they're working hard to improve, you right. can see it. If they're not making any effort, then, you know, there's different paths to go down, but give somebody a shot to win.
But you know what else, Daniel, kind of related to that? They've got to see that you're getting better too. And that's where a lot of leaders will say, wow, I finally made it to the top. I can just kind of kick back. Relax. I've got a wonderful pension coming my way. I've got the biggest office, blah, blah, blah. But there are ways to show your people that you are getting better too. So for example, when you publicly talk about that you are assessed and reviewed also, they don't need to know every piece of your evaluation, but they do need to know that you get assessed also, right? I'm a big believer in small groups for encouragement, support, or even mastermind groups, because they just give you perspective and context and sometimes support and encouragement when you need it. And so that's a good way to get better, because you're meeting regularly with people who have high standards too. They need to know that, you know, and if you have a private leadership coach, that's even better. And again, those are okay things to talk about with your people, with your staff. And it just makes it gives them permission to try to get better too.
I didn't know you're going to bring that up. But this quote really just wrecked me, the idea that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And that was the quote that made me rethink of how I spend my time, who I spend my time with. That was the quote that got me off my butt, and I joined a mastermind, right?
Wow.
With View from the Top with Aaron Walker. And Mike, because that changed my life so much in a relatively short amount of time. And then I looked out around the landscape and I saw, wait a second, who's doing this for school leaders?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this was an opportunity, man, it's become my life's work. You know, it's a passion project, but the weekly accountability, relationship building, discussing of topics that matter, and not just talking about school, because it's important, but talking about personal stuff too, because it's all connected.
Yeah.
That is exciting stuff to me. So
yeah.
Thank you for mentioning it. And I just want to kind of give the listeners a little bit of a view of how I got there too.
Cool.
What's a class, Mike, you'd add to all our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
Good question. Maybe mindfulness, maybe digital citizenship, maybe some kind of an independent study, you know, where there's less instructional time and the freedom and space to do individual projects where a student might be guided by, you know, a teacher once or twice a week. Yeah, those are some things that come to mind.
What's the worst leadership advice you've been given or have heard being given?
Oh, boy. You know, I think somebody told me one time, you have to be bold all the time. And I don't believe that.
And I would assume that's frightening for an introvert too.
Yes, that's right. I think you need to be boring some of the time. You know, in other words, you need to just do the work. I'm a big Boston Red Sox fan, and I remember back in the 2000s when Curt Schilling went from I think it was the Diamondbacks to the Red Sox. Yeah. And at the time, Pedro Martinez was the top ace of the Red Sox team, and they asked Schilling, you know, how are you going to become assimilated into this team? And, you know, knowing that this other guy is sort of the top dog, I mean, how are you ever going to like carve out space for your own leadership? And he said, just pitch a lot of innings. And I think for school leaders, there's something to be said for that. You got to be there early in the morning, late at night. And I have to say, most of the time, You know, it's not like once a week you should be there early. You kind of should be there most days early, you know, and you're probably going to have to stay late a lot of days. And people notice. They notice when your car is there and when it's not there. And it's not that they say anything, but that kind of slow grind of presence is really valuable. And I don't think you need to be bold all the time. I think you need to be consistent most of the time. And boy, that's good advice, you know, for me as a young leader and even still as a little bit older leader, it's good advice.
Concerning school leadership, have you changed your mind about anything in the past few years?
You know, one thing from the perspective of the district or, you know, in my school systems, we're in what are called dioceses. So they're like massive school districts of sometimes 100 schools. I think that there are a lot of opportunities for alignment in terms of, you know, how does a school improve? And that's from the central office to the local school. At least in my space in private education, there's still considerable gaps from what downtown thinks or wants to what the individual school can do and is doing. And yeah, I just think it places a real premium on great district and diocesan school leaders, supers and assistant supers. They are irrelevant in many places, and I don't think they've ever been more valuable than right now because there's such a need at the ground level for leadership from above them. And, you know, of course, district leaders, they want to be able to brag about great schools at the local level. But there's magic when those two work together, when central office and the local school are able to just be on the same page and be aligned. So I think that's a space that there's a lot of room for improvement.
What's one book every principal should read right now, Mike, and why?
Oh my gosh. I've been telling everybody about, can I mention two?
Yeah, I've had somebody mention six. So, you know, I say one book and it's your show. Do what you want.
Well, I'm a big fan of Grit by Angela Duckworth. I know it's right now, you know, a real popular book as we're recording this. Just very, very valuable. And it's valuable for teachers too, you know. So that's a great one. The other one is called The Road Back to You by Ian Krohn. I mean, a lot of people are probably familiar with Myers-Briggs or DISC in terms of personality assessments. Enneagram is very similar, and The Road Back to You details that particular assessment called the Enneagram. It's very old, and it just gives a fairly objective view of each person and how they're wired and uniquely gifted. And it's really fun to look at your faculty and staff and try to figure people out, you know, and if there's somebody who really bothers you and gets under your skin, all the more reason to explore something like Myers-Briggs or Enneagram or DISC. Those are two books that are just great that I've been recommending to a lot of people. Grit by Angela Duckworth and Ian Krohn's The Road Back to You.
What number are you?
I'm a one for better or worse. I wish I wasn't on some days of the week, but it is what it is.
Gotcha. I was trying to look up what my number was. I can't remember and couldn't find it quick enough, but it is an interesting assessment, and I'm looking forward to digging into the book. I did purchase it.
Yeah, cool.
What do you do for fun, Mike?
You know, I love working outdoors in my yard here in New Jersey. I love hanging with my kids, you know, whether it's just throwing the football or playing basketball against my son. I love going to get coffee, taking my girls out for breakfast at a Jersey diner. That's a lot of fun. I love going for hikes. We've got some wonderful, believe it or not, some wonderful nature reserves here in New Jersey. Don't believe everything you see on TV. And my wife and I love going to the movies and watching movies, renting movies, going to the movies. That's just a lot of fun. And it's just a time to just be us and be together. And we're just kind of movie buffs. So that's fun too.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Fundraising.
That makes sense. Very good.
Yeah. Fundraising is in the private school world. That is the most valuable position right now, right after school leaders. That's something that I continue to try to get better at. And I wish I were naturally gifted at it, but it's more something I have to just keep working at.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could for just a day?
Oh my goodness. That's a big question.
Thank you.
Oh boy. What marquee would I put? How about this? All right, I'm just shooting from the hip here, okay? So this could really be awful or really amazing. I have no idea. But how about this? It would be a message to students, and it would say something like this. You belong here, you matter, and you have a future. Ooh, that's good. I like that.
I think you nailed it. Yeah.
But the question is it a scrolling marquee? Is it like one of those cool, you know, red light marquees or
– whatever kind of marquee you want.
That's what I would have it say, I think.
Well, I want to tap into your creativity here too. And believe me, it's whatever you want with this question. And Mike, congratulations. You've been a great guest and you've made it to the end. And this is my favorite question to ask. I actually took it out because I just wanted to freshen things up and the listeners are revolted. So it will be here forever, guys. Don't worry. Keep listening. Mike, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or any type of resource. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Oh, boy. How would you build it in your top three priorities? Okay, well, first, from a teacher standpoint, I would hire teachers who are hungry, who are willing to hustle, who love kids, and who are not afraid of parents. I would hire teachers who want to grow and really believe that intellectual curiosity is a gift that has to be nurtured. And okay, so that's on the teacher side, right? And I would hire the absolute best teachers I could. That doesn't mean they're all from Ivy League schools. I could really care less, you know, where a person got their degree from. But you got to be hungry. You got to be willing to hustle and get better. And you got to love kids. From a building perspective, I would have some open spaces. I would give students more flexibility and creativity and ability to choose and craft their own curriculum, not totally their own, but just have some spaces of freedom and choice. And the older they got, more and more of those. I would have extensive student involvement in terms of major decision making. You know, so not just sort of the token student council and let's ask them what they think about the lunch food, but I would try to involve students in an appropriate way in any major thing that impacted the school. You know, I don't know elementary school that well, so I can only speak to secondary, but I would have a schedule that really aligns with healthy student habits. So, you know, I would not have students switching classes 8 and 9 times a day. I think that's insane. I would pay attention to seasonality and times of the year when students just, we know empirically that they just run down and they get tired. And so I would be attentive to that and build a schedule that maximizes their peak times of learning in the course of a year. I would challenge the status quo. And that means college placement. I would certainly promote that, but I just think there's too much fear-mongering and scarcity mindset among colleges that bleeds down into high schools and elementary schools. I'm going to say this, Daniel. I know this is probably controversial. I would probably place less emphasis on athletics.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I know, right? I hope that your listeners don't abandon your show for hearing me say that.
But, no, it's great. It starts a discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I've visited some of the better charter schools in the country, and I've studied some of the better school districts around the world. And if there's one thing many of them have in common, it's less emphasis on sports. And I say that as a devout sports fan, okay? But I've just seen so many schools get sidetracked by an obsession with athletics and all of the consequences that come with that.
Right, but you're separating out the athletics from being active, so that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Let me see what else. I would have a building that's fun, that has a name. You know, none of this like PS12 business, and I don't know any kids that are proud of going to PS12. You know, I would be open to fun and just building a culture that the whole neighborhood looks at that school and says, oh my gosh, if that school wasn't there, this neighborhood just wouldn't be the same, you know? And I would honor alumni, students of all different ages as they go on through life, because you never know when you're going to need them. And that's for public schools and private schools. I'm not going to weigh in on the whole Common Core or not piece. I mean, I could probably argue that both ways. In terms of technology, and this is the last thing I'll say, I mean, again, I'm a technology guy, so this is probably going to sound weird, but I would teach first mindfulness and attentiveness, and then only later would I go into digital citizenship and then, you know, having one-to-one programs and things like that. I think those are valuable, but I wouldn't rush into those. So, gosh, I feel like I covered a lot of ground there. I don't even know what the school looks like, but I would want to go to a school like that.
Absolutely. Thank you for putting thought and effort into that question. Mike, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, my only words of advice are just thank you for having me on the show. And for anybody who listens, just be encouraged. Be encouraged and don't let the turkeys get you down. Remember that probably 98% of your staff and your students are pretty happy. And so don't let the 2% get you down. People can get a hold of me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or my website, www.mikestpierre.com.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Mike. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Mike in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Mike, thank you again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thanks, buddy.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.